All right, welcome into the Chris Collinsworth podcast, starring Richard Sherman and presented by our great friends at DraftKings and the DraftKings Sportsbook app. This week, if you sign up using the promo code PFF, you can get 100-to-1 odds on any football game this weekend. So go download the app and get started today. If you have not enjoyed the other podcasts as part of the PFF podcast family, we've got the NFL podcast breaking down all the games from last week and looking ahead, the forecast, which helps you maybe make a better two. The two for one concerning the draft, fantasy is a little bit past, but who knows, you may still want to enjoy that. So here we go. We've got Richard Sherman in an analytics debate. Some of the key things that happened during the course of the games this weekend with Frank Reich and with all the different controversial decisions in Pittsburgh, whether you go for it, whether you kick the field goal, whether you try for the touchdown, whether you punt, all those different things. And then we look ahead to this weekend's game. So let's get right to it with Richard Sherman. All right, here we go with our podcast for the playoffs. This stuff is getting good, man. I tell you what, for the first time all year long, Richard, I sat and was able to actually watch a football game and hear the announcers. I mean, usually I'm probably like you. All I do is watch game film and, you know, you don't get the full experience. You don't get the whole thing. But this weekend was like game after game after game after game. It was just awesome. It was a great, great weekend.
That's awesome. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was good. It was a great weekend of football. It was unpredictable. That's what playoff football is about. You know, some teams that got out there and hadn't had any playoff success in years and got to have some playoff success. Some quarterbacks finally got to prove that, hey, you know, it wasn't just regular season, you know, they're playoff ready. And it was really cool. You know, it's that's the cool thing about the league is, you know, there's always a new superstar. There's always something happening. There's always unpredictability and this year for sure.
Yeah, we've got all the babies left in the AFC playing quarterback, too. So we'll get into all that in just a little bit. George Shahuri, you know him well. Of course, he is part of our forecast podcast. And we've got he and Eric, and we've got the two-for-one draft podcast. If you haven't heard that one, we've got the NFL podcast with Steve and Sam, which is all of them are fantastic and all have very specific reasons for being on the air. But George is, I don't know how many people know, also kind of our behind the scenes guru for NBC when it comes to the analytics part of it, when to punt, when to kick the field goal, when to what the percentage odds are. He's our mathematician, Richard, you know, so just don't go to Vegas with this guy.
I'm the whipping boy is what Chris is really trying to say, right? Yeah, so when they don't want to agree with a math decision, they blame it on me.
Correct.
And Al gets snarky. And, you know, that's what I'm there for. It's okay.
Somebody has to be the fall guy.
You know, they need someone tough. That's right, the thing.
Right.
Not everyone could handle that job.
There's a lot of people who get paid less than he does to be the fall guy. I'm just going to say that. There are cheaper versions of a fall guy, Richard. You hear me?
That's a touche.
All right. So let's go over a couple of these situations. And I was so interested. You know, so of course I'm sitting there in the booth and I have to make the call. You know, I've got to, and I never even have to worry about what George says, because George, if it's fourth down, he's always going to say go for it. Or he's always going to say, you know, he's always on the aggressive end of the spectrum. But I want to go through these situations that we saw last weekend. And I want to start with the Colts and Frank Reich. So they've got the ball. There's a minute 52 remaining, right? Second quarter, fourth and goal from the 4-yard line. They're up 10-7 at this point, and they decide to go for the touchdown. George, correct decision, incorrect decision, and why?
It's funny. We know the Colts analytics guys decently well. Other fall guys, I guess you could say. And they do a really good job over there, and they have a direct line of communication to Frank Reich. So he got the right information. The choice to go for it gave them a 6% better chance to win the game than if you made the choice to kick it. And that's what you have to remember. And I'm really curious to hear Richard's thought on this as someone that's been on the field during these situations, because every time it's all about the result of the play. You know, people decide if it was a good decision on whether the play is successful or fails, and they totally throw out the whole chance that any play could succeed or fail. You're playing a game of probability. And fourth and four, you may only succeed 55% of the time, but that's enough on that 55% that you do succeed to make it worthwhile. If they score a touchdown there, remember, they're a big underdog in this game. They score a touchdown there, they go up 17-7. That's massive for them. So you got to play to win the game. Playing to try and lose by a little bit less, to me, is always the wrong way to approach it. And I think the heuristic that I would use is, what does the other team not want you to do? You know, if you're a fan of the Bills and you're sitting there and you're like, yeah, I'm kind of cool with a field goal, you know, like 6 points. Okay. You know, we can hang with that. I don't want them to go for it and score a touchdown though, you know, and if they don't get it, then we have to drive the whole length of the field. So it was the right decision by Frank Reich.
Richard, I don't know if you were watching the game or not, but your thoughts on that way of thinking about, if the fans in the stands don't want you to kick the field goal, then maybe you should kick the field goal and vice versa. That there's sort of a gut, natural, intuitive feel to whatever the defense wants, I want to do the other.
It's about taking the points. At the end of the day, I feel the analytics, but in the situation, it's less about analytics. That's why I'm not a huge super fan of analytics, especially in situations like that. You can have analytics for different things in football, but when to go for it, when to not go for it, because there's too many variables. You know, you don't know which O lineman's getting his butt kicked all game. You don't know which D lineman is hyped up. You don't know who's tired. You don't know who's like, there's too many variables in football, you know? And if we've stopped you three times in the goal line, goal to goal situation, we expect to stop you on the fourth. Like, so it's almost like we prefer for you to go for it. The teams would prefer you to go for it, because now I have a chance to keep points off the board, period. Like, now I know I have a chance. Like, usually when you get in a situation where they automatically have a field goal, you know you're giving up points. You're just like, hey, let's keep the touchdown off the board. So I think in a situation, just not analytics guy, just football player, I think the defense prefers for a team to go for it. The opposition would like a team to go for it. I think you take the points, because it's not about the 6% or whatever the case may be. It's just on the field. It's a feel. So I don't know if Frank Wright had the feel, or who what feeling he had, or did he just listen to the analytics guy? Because you have a feel on the field. You're like, hey, we're about to score. Like, we had two wide open guys on second and third down. We just missed them, or somebody blew up. Hey, you guys bow up. We got a guy. We got to play. We know it's going to work. Bang. You know, that, like Alabama ran two or three unstoppable plays yesterday. The reverse motion, all the touchdowns to Devontae Smith within the 5-yard line or 6-yard line, wherever they were pretty unstoppable, because they knew they were in man coverage. Bang, they knew they had them. You know you're going to get the touchdown. But when you don't know that, when you don't have that feel, you take the points. Going up 13 points is much better than being up 10. Because you go up 10 and we just stopped you, momentum flips in a crazy way.
Well, and here's the interesting thing. They schemed a guy open. You know, Michael Pittman was open on that play, and they didn't hit him. You know, it was like 2 yards too, or not 2 yards, but like 2 feet too long. And that's the tough thing, is you can have a play you like, it doesn't work all the time. One of the things that's interesting about that, Richard, is the margins are so small. Like, 6% is actually a really big amount of percentage points to lose or gain, given the situation. Like, oftentimes it's 1 or 2%, and the feel is really important there, because little things can change that a little bit. What's interesting though in this situation is, you know, over the way that you learn that percentage, the way that percentage comes up, is from looking at all those prior situations, right? And gauging how likely they are to succeed. And those situations have the things you're talking about, where you might have a mismatch here or a mismatch there. So there is a little bit of that baked in, but ultimately you're right. The coach has to identify how big of a swing do some of the situations that are on the field that aren't measured by the models, how much do those take into account? My argument here would be that 6% is a pretty big percentage for any of those little things to matter enough. Now, it didn't work out for him, obviously, but you mentioned taking the points. they missed a field goal later on in the game. You know, like those things aren't gimmies either. So, it's tough because he ended up losing the game. If they win the game, I guarantee you that everyone's talking about what a genius he is.
Right, right. But in a situation like that, if you lose, that's the reason you lost. You know what I mean? So it's not about like, oh man, analytics, this and that, but you lose. That's a huge reason you lost. So I feel you saying, oh, this 6% here, 6% there, but it's psychological. Like, that's why football isn't a like black and white cut and dry game, because there's so many human elements into it. You know, your team's thinking about it. Your offense has just been stopped, like totally stone cold stopped. No points. You drove all the way down there. It's psyche at that point. And the other team's psyche is like, hey, we can stop these guys anywhere. They drove it all the way down the field. It's human. So it's a lot more to it. And in a football game, that might have lost them the game psychologically.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, Richard, about this. The choke factor on fourth down. You know, that's the part I can never do the math on. And George, you guys probably have. But a catch that's on first down compared to a catch or a throw that's on fourth down is a different animal. It's just a different animal because, you know, human nerves come into play a little bit as well. Now, at least in my mind, I would narrow down to one, maybe two guys on the offense that they're going to trust to make that throw or that catch in that situation. So that's got to help the defense just a bit too.
Oh, 100%. 100%. If you're playing the Green Bay Packers, Davante Adams is getting the ball. If it's fourth and more than two or three, you know, I mean, you can go Aaron Jones, you can split the backs out, you can do all that. I think he trusts Tonyan. But there is something to understanding who's getting the ball, who's the go-to guy, and who's going to be poised enough in the situation to get it done. But that's where I'm not as much of a fan of probability, because it's almost impossible to take all that into account.
All right, let's talk about the next one. And I was doing this game, Pittsburgh-Cleveland, and I don't know what the analytics would have been, George, but Mike Tomlin made the decision. It was fourth down and one. They had the entirety of the fourth quarter still to go. They're down 35-23. But to say they're down 35-23 in this game doesn't tell the story, right? I mean, it was 28-0. Pittsburgh's getting blown out. And now clearly the entire momentum has swung back in favor of the Pittsburgh Steelers. If they go down and make that a 6-point game, they score a touchdown on that drive, Cleveland's choke factor is going to go through the roof. I mean, you can already feel it. They make the decision to punt the ball. And so I always get coaches and people who text me after the game, right? And the overwhelming phrase that I got from people was, they took their foot off their throat. That Pittsburgh took their foot off. They basically let Cleveland breathe a little bit, gave them a chance, and then they take it right back down the field and score a touchdown. What did the math say about that decision? And then, Richard, get your thoughts on what you might have done.
This one was even worse of a decision. The Frank Reich one was a big one, given how early in the game it was. But the later you get on in the game, these decisions have a huge impact, right? Because you've only got, I think it was right at the quarter, right? Like right at the end of the third quarter. Fourth and one on, I think it was the 48. And you're right, they were down 28-0. So they scored like 23 points straight, maybe.
I think it was 35-23 at that point.
Yep. So this could have potentially, this was like an 8% change, which is really, really big. In a football game. And I would be curious. So Richard, you mentioned, okay, on the other one, on the Colts one, I, as a defender, was glad, I would be glad if they went for it. Here, if you put yourself in the Browns' shoes, are you relieved that you've gotten a stop on third and one, and on fourth and one, they're going to punt it away here?
Oh, no question. No question. Especially when the momentum has shifted and they've been hyping up, like they've been going. And on top of that, Cleveland is such a run-heavy team. The best defense is a great run game. Like, the shorter a team has to be on the field, the greater the defense they'll play because they won't play as many plays. You know, and like, hey, these guys barely give up any yards. Where they're barely on the field because they're running for 300, 250 a game. You know, so the clock, their clock management, they're holding the ball for time of possession, 35 minutes, 40 minutes a game, you know? And so as a defense, you're definitely relieved if you're Cleveland Browns because you know you have a strong run game. You're up 12 going into the fourth. You're like, man, shoot, they only needed a yard. They could, you can QB sneak. You can fall for a yard, you know, on most defenses unless you got somebody crazy in the middle, you know? And so for a team to be in that situation and not be confident enough to go for it is crazy. You know, that you go for it with Tom Brady and Drew Brees. They jump over the line, put the ball over, you know, and pull back and say, hey, first down.
How can a guy, you know, and I have a lot of respect for what Big Ben has done, but how can you have the nickname Big Ben and never sneak?
Right, right. That's a great question. That's a great question. You got to talk to him and Tomlin about that.
Because they like almost never sneak. And this was a situation, Chris, where I would have assumed if any other team lines up there, you're saying, you or Al is saying, watch the sneak here, right?
Right. Or at the very least, you're forcing the defense to go that four-man reduction over right, the center, and you can run off tackle or run wherever you want, right? So then you end up in either or situation. But they are the worst. You know, they're last in rushing this year, Pittsburgh is. Ben doesn't do a quarterback sneak. So I guarantee it at least crossed Tomlin's mind, we've got to complete a pass here in order to get this first down, which is so bizarre when you think about the Pittsburgh Steelers.
What's crazy is the new fad, and I'm sure we're going to see it in these playoffs at some point or another. I would guess Kansas City and Buffalo do it. Buffalo for sure. Yeah, I think Buffalo would do it too. But the Dallas did it to us where they motion the fullback, motion the tight end, then line them up under center and then take it and go. Because right. It doesn't give the defense time to prepare. It doesn't. You're not expecting it. Quarterback's in the gun. You're like, hey, it's not a sneak. Like, prepare for everything else. So the D-line split. The D-line spread normal. By the time he gets under center, nobody's tightening up. You're just so perplexed. You're like, the hell is the fullback doing under center? Bang, first down. And wow. I almost thought in the playoffs, you have to have, like, something like that in the hole. For that exact situation, you say, hey, our quarterback's not a sneak guy. We're going to have this play. And this is a copycat league, as you know. Everybody copies everybody. So – by the time somebody knows you run it, you're not going to need it anymore. You already got it. You already won the game. You already got a fourth and one in a crucial situation with a play nobody was expecting. But, you know, they didn't have it, so it's what it is.
Let me ask you this, Richard. So the phrase that was used or is often used, I think was used in this game too, is like, we're going to trust our defense, okay? And I always balk at that because I feel like if you trust your defense, then you have no problem going for it, because you trust them to hold the other team to either a field goal or you know, where, depending where you are on the field. Does that act, do you feel as a defender when you're there, like, oh, my coach trusts us because he's punting? Or do you feel like if they go for it, I know they trust me because they're willing to see if we can hold them here?
I know they trust him when they go for it. They don't, he had no needs, he had no like inkling to trust him. They had given up 35 points. They had given up 28. There's nothing to trust, you know, and that, and now the whole year, you know, they've been fantastic, they've been phenomenal. They've been making huge plays. This was just kind of a bluster, you know, things kind of fell all in the same situation, all in the same day, you know, Murphy's Law, everything went bad that could go bad, went bad. But no, he didn't trust him. And he wasn't willing to gamble with it. You know, that's why he didn't go for it.
It's such an interesting mix of decisions that are being made, and the analytics are definitely putting pressure on. Doug Peterson goes to the Super Bowl where it felt like every fourth down he went for it, and every Super Bowl and every fourth down they got it, you know, the whole season. And over the last couple of years, it feels like every time he tries to go for it in one of those situations, they don't get it. But George makes a great point in that, what it takes from a decision maker is, okay, if the math tells me this is a 51-49 decision, that also means that 49 times I'm going to have to get up in my press conference and go, yeah, that was my call. You know, that was my call. And I think that is a backbreaker for a lot of coaches.
Right. But you lose the game, you're going to have to sit up there and take that anyway. And that's a bigger conversation anyway. But I think in the end, I think it was Cleveland's run game that really, really made everybody uncomfortable, because it should have made Tomlin uncomfortable enough to go for it, because it there was a chance they could go 7 minutes and you wouldn't see the ball again, you know, the way they were running. And so for him to trust that his defense was going to be able to stop Kareem Hunt and Chubb was, as they haven't the whole game, you know, was kind of asinine. You know, they're going to run the ball down your throat, and they've been running the ball down your throat. So you're getting close. You have a chance to keep it close and keep the ball while you got it. You got to take it. You know, you finally, you're on house money at this point. You were getting blown out. You're out of the game.
And that's such a great point, Chris. That reminds me of the Eagles you just mentioned in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. So time here is of the essence. You got 15 minutes left in the game. You're down two scores. When you punt the ball away, you give the team that is beating your brakes off more field to work with, as Richard mentions. And that means you're milking more clock, right? So when Nick Foles and the Eagles were sitting there on that fourth and one in the fourth quarter against Tom Brady, it was like, look, if we don't get it here, yeah, they might score, but at least we get the ball back with some time. But if we punt it away, they might score too and bleed an extra 4 minutes off the clock, and then we're dead in the water.
It is interesting. I love the math. I love the discussions. It is old school, new school. It is everything going on in football right now, but definitely a lot of fun. Hey, we've got some great games coming up this weekend. Let's get right into some of these because you can't get a whole lot more interesting. I'm not going to talk about my record from last week. George crushed me last week.
2-3-1.
Oh, what a brutal.
Only wants to talk about it when he has the good week. Well, it's my bad week. We're gonna ride right past it.
For some reason, I said the Bears have got to win because there's in my mind there's no way that they can cover the spread, and so I said I'm just going opposite here. And then they dropped the friggin' pass on the trick play in the first half. I'm like, I was driving to the stadium. I almost had to turn around. I couldn't even.
You trusted the untrustable.
I did, you know, that I did.
And the game was on Nickelodeon too. We should have known like something really wonky was going to happen.
I should have known. I think my guys got slimed. Wims got slimed in the end zone.
Richard, did you watch the Nickelodeon or you see any of the Nickelodeon stuff?
I saw some of the highlights and stuff. It was pretty cool.
I mean, I don't have kids, so I have no idea if it was like, if there were kids out there that wouldn't have normally watched the game who were like, hey, I'll watch this because it's on Nick. But
I mean, if kids were watching, it was easy for them to digest. My kids watch it the normal way, and my son enjoys it. But it's cool because it's simple. They explain it. They're not just confused. Like, what happened? Why are they moving back? Why are they moving forward? It's like, hey, it's 5 yards. The guy moved when he wasn't supposed to move. Just like when my dad, like, it's like, oh, okay, it's relatable. It's fun. They're SpongeBob, you know, they put random stuff in there for the kids to be like, you know, to distract them. And it's a great idea, great concept.
I personally love when they shot the slime after the touchdowns. they lit up the end zone. I was like, I would do that in a heartbeat. That was cool.
It needs to be real.
Yeah, you're sitting there in a bar. You can't hear the sound anyway. And you see all the slime come up. Well, they must have scored. Okay, good.
That's the score.
All right, while the holiday season may be over, the sports calendar is in full swing this week. As we well know, from collegiate to professional sports, there's no shortage of action, and there's no better place to get in on all that action than with DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook. If you haven't tried out DraftKings Sportsbook, what in the world are you waiting for? Use promo code PFF when you sign up and you get 100-1 odds. That's right, 100-1 odds on any great playoff game this weekend. Just bet $1 on any team, and if they happen to win, you win $100. How about that, George?
It seems pretty simple, although, as we talk about, there's some close games here. Even the one that I think everyone would immediately bet on, which is the Chiefs, right, because they're a 10-point favorite. I don't know. Richard made some compelling arguments about why the Browns can keep it close. So choose wisely, but that is an opportunity that you've got to take advantage of, because when you get $100 free dollars, then you get a chance to enjoy more in the conference championship or, you know, NBA or college basketball, if that's your thing, because DraftKings has a ton of daily odds boosts for all of those games. So it doesn't matter what day of the week, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all the way through, they've got good stuff for you. So go download the top-rated DraftKings app. As Chris said, use promo code PFF when you sign up, and that way you can place a bet for $1 at 100-1 odds on any team to win this weekend, and you will get paid out $100 if they do. promo code is PFF. It's for this weekend only, so go make it happen. You must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
All right, here we go. All right, let's talk about some of these games now. The Rams and Packers, and the Packers are a 7-point favorite in this game. But it's so bizarre. There's two different ways, I think, to look at this game. One, what are the Rams going to do at quarterback, right? What's that equation going to look like? And two, no David Bakhtiari against one of the best defenses in all of football. And what might that mean? And three, from my standpoint, I think Devontae Adams going against Jalen Ramsey is about as good as we're going to get during the course of these playoffs as far as a matchup. You guys can start with anything you want, but how do you feel about the Rams defense going against the Packers offensive line without David Bakhtiari?
It's definitely one of those situations where they're going against A-Rod. And A-Rod knows exactly what he's dealing with. He knows his tackle's out. He knows Aaron Donald's in the middle. And I think they're gonna lean on their run game and play action pass. And they have a lot of film against the Rams, you know, in this kind of system. You know, you got Kyle's system going against them. You got against this defense. So LaFleur and Kyle, they're using the same system. So he has plenty of film, plenty of things where you're like, hey, there's a hole. We're going to outside zone is going to work. This is how we get to this play. And years and years of film, you know, the defense has changed a little bit this year, but fundamentally they're similar to how they've been. So I think they'll have a great plan. I think the snow will factor in a little bit offensively for the Rams because just, you know, I mean, you're out there in the snow, you know, in Lambeau, it's not going to be fun by the time they figure out, you know, like we talked about last week, time they figure out, hey, this is how you get your cleats in the ground, man. Just do this. Wear the studs. You know, it's the third, fourth quarter, and Green Bay may have gotten away.
Yeah, LaFleur and McVay, they're like, in a weird way, you know, McVay is the teacher, and the older guy is the pupil in Matt LaFleur, and yet they can't know each other any better, right? You just simply couldn't know each other any better. Families on both sides, and so it's a great game. How do you feel about the Ramsey matchup with Devontae?
I think it's going to be great. You know, I think obviously the way they use Devontae and they'll shadow him with Ramsey. I think they'll keep a safety over the top. I think they'll play a little two man. They'll play Cloud. They'll allow Ramsey to get his hands on him and try to be more aggressive, but aggressive with a safety net. You know, they won't just leave him one-on-one and say, hey, get your hands on him and, you know, good luck. I think it'll be two man, so he can be aggressive. He can feel his releases. He can get a feel for what he's dealing with and still have a guy over top. I think that's what Aaron Donald gives you. That's the luxury that Aaron Donald gives you, because you can't usually take a safety out of the mix when you got a great run game. You know, Green Bay has a great run game and they have three great backs. So I think they'll start off that way. And once he gets a rhythm, they'll play a little bit of man to man. They'll zone him. You know, they'll try to take him out of the game in various ways.
Yeah, that is the one that I'm so interested to watch. I think it's the best matchup we'll see all season from a wide receiver cornerback. And both of these guys have been so good in single coverage. I mean, you guys talked to Devontae Adams last week, and he talked about all of his release packages. Richard, is Jalen Ramsey like you were building a corner in a lab to stop Devontae Adams or contain him or hold him back? Is he the guy, or is there something that Adams you think will be able to attack that can help him have some success?
Well, Adam, I mean, it's going to be tough. The perfect guy is a combination of a ton of people. You know, it'd be Revis's feet. It'd be, you know, Charles Woodson's head. It'd be, you know, these arms, these legs. In this situation, I think and you know, he's as good as it gets in football. You know, him or Xavier Howard, you know, would be the best, you know, that you can trot out there at this point in time. But I still think the offense is they have an advantage. You know, they know where they're going. They're going forward. They're in the snow. You know, the footing's going to be what it is. Do I think he'll have a great plan and be able to execute and be able to play to his strengths and the team put him in great position? Yeah, of course. you know, I don't think they're going to leave him in one-on-one situations. You know, I think if you go freaking 60 plays and he's in 50 plays of one-on-one man, then, you know, there's an obvious advantage. Devontae is going to find a way, you know, A-Rod's going to find time, buy time for him to, and we just talked to Devontae. Even if Ramsey covers the first route, he's just going to smoothly transition into the next route. You know, he's going to, hey, if a slant and he jumps the slant, he's just going to go. He's just going to, it's not a plan. It's not, hey, this is a slug on paper. It's, hey, he stopped the slant. I'm going, wait for me to get to the go. And then it's, you know, so it's different. It's not just, hey, can Ramsey cover Devontae Adams? It's not going to just come down to that. It's going to come down to, can the Rams scheme to play to Ramsey's strengths and get Devontae in situations that Aaron isn't comfortable putting the ball there? And can Aaron and Devontae combat that?
It's interesting because Derrick Henry did not have a great game against this Green Bay Packers defense in the snow, but we have seen them struggle at various times this year trying to stop the run. And, you know, Cam Akers had a nice game the other day. So, and the other part of it is the Green Bay Packers, I think one of the great unknowns for me coming into this game is how big of an impact are we going to get from A.J. Dillon? He came out in that game, this 250-pound guy. Now he's in the snow. You've got Aaron Jones there as well. But could Dillon end up being sort of the X factor coming into these playoffs?
He did. I'm sorry. I don't know if George wanted to go.
No, I was going to say, you know, and answer the Dillon question here in a second, but I was just going to ask that from a scheme perspective, there's more than just Adams, right, for Green Bay. They have a few other things now that they can actually hurt you with. And does the Rams scheme, it's a lot, people have talked about Brandon Staley as a potential head coaching candidate for how good this scheme is. Like, is that something that we can really think about as being a potential stopper of the best offense in the NFL? Because that's what the Packers are. I mean, they've been unstoppable offensively.
It's tough to say because like you just said, with McVay and LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan is the tree, you know, and we've literally watched Kyle go against McVay and shred it, you know, go against this defense with Nick Mullins and, you know, a banged up offense and win. And so I think, like I said earlier, it's a blueprint for it. You know, it's not like they changed the defense against the 49ers and said, hey, we're just going to run something else. You know, this is the same defense. He lost to a team with a bunch of guys banged up, you know, no George Kittle, no Raheem, no, you know, missing probably six starters and your starting quarterback. And they weren't able to get that stop, you know. So it's not to say that this scheme is just, man, this is the most sound and unstoppable scheme in the world. It's not. It's been beaten, and it's been beaten by this scheme, by this run game, by inside, outside zone, play action pass. And I think that's whatever, you know, I'd have to go back and look at the tape to see exactly what Kyle's plan was in both games, but he won twice. And this is the same scheme. So he'll this copycat league, they'll take familiar, whatever, plays that they have the same plays. I mean, they all run the same stuff. But I think Cam Akers will make a difference. Like I said before, the best defense is a great run game. So it'll work both ways. But I think the Rams have a better offense to deal with. You know, Packers are a better offense. So they need their run game more than the Packers need their run game. So if they can manage the clock and control it, you know, it's gonna be a tale of watching the exact same offense play. You're going to be like, hey, that's the same motion we just saw. Hey, that's the same screen we just saw. Hey, that's the same inside zone we just saw. Hey, that's the same thunder belly we just saw.
the difference really now is going to be the Rams defense, right? I mean, and to some extent you get it. You get Aaron Donald, you get Jalen Ramsey, two of the great players in the league on the same defense. They should be good. But a lot of conversation now about Brandon Staley, their defensive coordinator, and some of the other things that they're going to do. You know, they're going to take their chances up front. They're going to do whatever it is. That when we did their last game, they had Ramsey sort of in the slot and making him the blitzer X factor. I don't know how much they're still doing of that kind of stuff. But your impressions of the Rams on defense and Brandon Staley, are they doing something really fresh and new?
Well, they're being versatile, you know, and Anytime you use, you know, you got a grenade in the middle of your defense like Aaron Donald, I mean, you could run vanilla and it could look like freaking, you know, like rocket science. But I think what they're doing with Jalen Ramsey is more to just put it on tape and to say, hey, it can be unpredictable. You can't say he's just going to line up here. You can't say he's going to line up here. I think Aaron Donald got a sack from DN the other day, you know, and I think it's the same thing. You can't just predict what we're going to do with Aaron Donald. We can put all of our best rushers. We can put Floyd and three rushers to the right and Aaron to the left, and you're going to have to slide to Aaron. And I think that's what they're doing. They're running cover six. They're running some two man. They're running two trap and things like that. But it's not like what they're doing, nobody's ever done. You know, they're not breaking the mold and saying, hey, this is brand new. But they are playing to the strengths of their players. You know, I've never seen a DB call a defense. You know, John Johnson calls their defense. He has the green dot. I don't think I've ever seen that in football, you know, with some of the greatest DBs to ever play. He's the middle linebacker. He's the Mike. He's calling defense. So when you're running your defense through a DB, it's definitely different. It's fundamentally different than anything I've ever seen. I didn't even notice it until they played Seattle the week 16.
I think their core philosophy is they're going to give you whatever they give you up front, but they are not going to let you have a cheap one over the top. And it'll be interesting to see how frustrated, you know, they can get Aaron to be. I doubt it. The only team I've seen frustrate him this season really was Tampa Bay, who just blitzed him relentlessly during the course of that game. So anyway, Georgie, who are you picking in this one? I won't ask Richard to pick against the spread here. I don't want to get him in trouble, but
yeah, no gambling on the NFL. It's against policy, guys.
Yeah. He's going to tell us who's going to win. And man, this is a tough one because I really do like the Packers offense. I think it stays close. I love Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey and Devontae Adams are like two of my favorite players to watch right now in the NFL. So I hope that it comes down to one of those matchups and that it stays close. So I'll go the Rams keeping it close and the Packers ultimately come out in the end.
I think the Packers are going to win it big. So I'm picking them in every way, shape, and form. I've seen too many warm weather teams come to Green Bay and just look cold.
No, I did look at the weather report, so you can take this into account, Richard. Snow on Thursday and Friday. It's just going to be cold as hell on Saturday and Sunday. So no, it won't be snowing, but it's going to be like mid 20s with some wind.
But you got Goff in his hand and trying to grip that football. No thanks. You can have him.
And you got California receivers.
On both sides.
Right, but one lives in it, though. You know, he's as Green Bay as anybody now, as Chiefs.
You know what? Yeah, Richard has convinced me.
No, you can't switch.
Richard is convinced. Richard and I are kind of on a team here.
You are the worst.
The California connection, it has to stay intact. So I'm going to take the Packers as well.
You're such a coward.
Love it.
Here we go. Let's move along here now. Let's jump over to America's Cleveland Browns now, traveling to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs, who, of course, had the bye in the first week. And so Patrick Mahomes and all these guys are just fresh and ready to go. But you can't discount what we saw from the Cleveland Browns. And the Browns are going to end up with some guys back now, right? Betonio will come back at guard. You'll have Denzel Ward, Kevin Johnson. You'll have your coaching staff come back. And really nothing to lose here for the Cleveland Browns, right? There's like nobody's going to pick the Cleveland Browns in this football game. And yet, man, they got a little something cooking right now because they can play power football and they've got a heck of an offensive line.
Be aware, Joe Woods. Joe Woods was our DB coach last year when we went to the Super Bowl. We had a sound scheme to combat the Kansas City Chiefs. We had a really sound scheme. Now, 3rd and 15, he throws a bomb. The corner plays are wrong. We give up a few plays at the end, but for three quarters, it was a really sound scheme. And I would expect the game plan to really mirror what we were able to do. They have a huge, great pass rusher in Myles Garrett that can be disruptive as we had with Bosa. They have other pass rushers who can be disruptive and bring pressure without bringing five. And then there are blitzes that they don't do as well with, that they don't pass as well. There are certain plays you can recognize from who's in the slot, who's outside, where's Hardman. And so Joe Woods is going to be a huge factor. He's a DC now with the Cleveland Browns, and nobody's going to give him credit for what he was able to do against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're like, hey, look at the offense. It's decent, but it was 28-0.
He called that game on the nose. I talked to him beforehand. He said, Chris, let me tell you what's going to happen. I've played Pittsburgh in various places 7 times in the last 5 years. He goes, you know, don't start getting on me when they complete a bunch of passes. He goes, I am not giving up a long pass in this game. I'm just not. He goes, if they can march it down the field and score completing, you know, 10 for 11 passes, then they're going to score a touchdown. But I'm not giving up a big one. He goes, I think he'll go, you know, he said 50. I think they ended up with about 65 passes. And they're going to have a bunch of completions, and we're going to win the game. I'm like, okay, man, let's see it. He called it. That's exactly what he did. He had it.
Because you just don't give up the bombs. Like, it's explosives. It's limiting explosives, and that's the same thing they'll try to do with Kansas City. You limit the explosives. You make them walk the ball down the field, and you make them be efficient. Like, if you can't throw bombs, you have to be efficient. And if you won't take it, that was what Russell Wilson struggled with. He wouldn't take what they gave him. He wanted the bomb every time, and they stopped running the ball. If Kansas City can run the ball like they have been, and they'll limit explosive defensively, it's going to be a dogfight. You know, that's what Atlanta was able to do to Kansas City to keep the game close. You have Matt Ryan, they controlled the ball, they controlled the time, and then they limited explosives. You know, this is a great offense. This is high powered. This is high flying. They can score points in a hurry, but you cannot score points without explosives. You cannot score them fast. And that's what Joe Woods understands. And if he can get his defense to continue to buy into that and continue to build on that, and they run the ball, it's going to be a lot closer than people think.
This is why I love listening to Richard talk about things, right? Like that I think was a perfect way to talk about what the Browns can do here. All the facets, right? So the biggest question for them is now not all the ancillary stuff. They'll have a scheme. They'll have a running game that we've seen consistently. They have the only offensive line with 3 guys this season who were the top graded player at their position. Like, you just don't see that. They've been really, really sound there. And we know the Chiefs defense is nothing special. So to me, it all comes down to Baker Mayfield. And so this is my question for you, Chris. Like, you watch Baker Mayfield play. I was worried for Baker Mayfield in that game against Pittsburgh. Was that a fluke? Did he happen to catch the right side of variance there? Or is this guy legitimately a quarterback that can come in and handle the fact that he's going up against Mahomes and the Chiefs and continue to play well?
Well, I think it depends on how the game goes. You know, the lead definitely made a difference because the Browns were shorthanded in the secondary, so they could stay in their, you know, shell coverage on the back end. But Baker is not throwing the interceptions. It was interesting that Alex Van Pelt, their offensive coordinator, and I had a long conversation about the significance of not giving Pittsburgh one of those emotional plays. You know, that I think I told the story during the game, but Belichick said before the Super Bowl one time where he wasn't playing Pittsburgh, he was just helping me with that work. And he said, man, he showed me some film where they're all jumping up and down on each other. They just gotten a sack or a sack fumble or something. The momentum of the game completely changed. He goes, you can't let them do this shit to you. I mean, I was like, I could almost hear it like, you can't let this happen to you out there. And so in the conversation, and so that's really what Baker was. Like, he didn't make every play, but he got the ball out of his hands. He never stood there and took that game-changing sack fumble from TJ or from Cam or any of those guys. And they just never got back into the rhythm. Plus, you've got a little added emotion. God dang. I got to shoot my phone today. You got a little added emotion with Kareem Hunt. You know, going back to Kansas City too. You know, I mean, this was all Nick Chubb as the receiver in this last game, but Kareem Hunt basically was let go, right, from Kansas City, and he has been the X factor in some of the passing game in this as well. The one that really worries me though is Jack Conklin. You know, one of the real stars of that defense is our offensive line has been Jack Conklin, and you know, now with the Kansas City have the ability to scheme around maybe him not being there with that hamstring? You know, can they hold up there?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked. So it seems like there's a lot of reason to think that the Browns can keep this close. Let me ask Richard this question. Is it better for the Browns to be playing free from expectation, right? They're a huge underdog. They just beat a team that was supposed to beat them. Or is the fact that they already won a really big game for them and the Chiefs are here, they're businesslike in their approach, their goal is to win a Super Bowl. Which side is better, for the Browns to be free and easy or for the Chiefs to be, we've been here before, we know what's going on, we are here to get this done?
I don't know if I say either one is better, because both of them are just like, that's how it is. You know what I mean? That's just a matter of fact. The Browns are on their own house of money. You know, they got nothing to lose, absolutely nothing to lose. They're the dogs. Nobody's expecting them to win. If they win, it's going to blow the world up. Like it's going to blow everybody's mind. And so, but in the same breath, Kansas City can't go in with anything other than business-like mentality. We have been here before. We have the experience. We just can't come in off a Super Bowl. We expect to come in here and perform as we have been performing. You have great leaders on that team. Tyrann Mathieu on the defensive side. You got Frank Clark. You got obviously Pat Mahomes. You got great weapons, Sammy Watkins. You got Tyreek Hardman. You got everything you need. I mean, you got Le'Veon Bell, who's going to factor in at some point or another, I'm sure. And Travis Kelce, I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. But I'm telling you, the way that Cleveland's playing, if Landry, you know, who's been incredibly reliable for him, Higgins, who's been incredibly reliable for him, and they can run the football. As you said, the offensive line has played incredibly well. If they're not able to generate, if Kansas City isn't able to generate pressure with five men and four-man rushes, and they have to bring and get exotic and get crazy and get, you know, it changes your defense fundamentally and it can hurt you. And they're going to have to be gap sound to stop the run. So they're going to have to give up some of the pressure looks. They're going to have to give up some of the disguise in order to stop the run. And I think that'll make it simpler for Baker Mayfield. You know, it'll make it simpler. It'll clean it up in the back end, because they won't just be able to, you know, drop and go from too high to one high or one high and back to too high. Because if you get caught going back to too high and they run it, that's 15 yards. That's, you know, 20 yards. And you can't keep doing that. So I think it's going to be a really interesting game. It's going to come down. I think Myles Garrett is going to be a huge factor in the game, because just like Bosa was, you know, if they cannot contain him and he can be disruptive, because they're not like a scheme where they max protect a ton. You know, they don't help. They don't sin and chip a lot. They don't, you know, I don't know why, but they don't. That's not Andy Reid's way. So they really force their old line to do their job, you know, and they have great tackles. But it's going to come down to that.
I think the Browns are a little bit like playing the Colts, you know, because you know they're going to be able to pound the football on you, and it's going to keep the game closer than what you think it's going to be. And then the pressure can shift to the favorite by the time you get to the end of this game. But I something about this game would feel uncomfortable to me. I probably would have been happy in the beginning that it wasn't going to be, you know, we got the Cleveland Browns. That's the lower seed. That's all. And then you start watching these guys on tape and you go, man, we've been playing a lot of close games against teams that can run the football and control the clock. And that's exactly who it is. And the other X factor here, I think, is Baker now has had so much success in the last two or three games with this empty set. So they have the ability now, especially with Kareem Hunt, who can effectively play wide receiver as well as the wide receivers they have sometimes, you know, to be able to go pack it in with tight ends and run the ball, or split them out and let Kareem Hunt go to work on them, which I'm sure he would love to do too.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of last year, the Tennessee Titans.
It's exactly right. And they jumped out to that early lead.
Right. They're catching their rhythm late. Their quarterback's playing better, like almost a different person in the second half of the season. And they're running the football. I mean, you know, you can say what you want about the comparisons, but Chubb is a good back. Derrick Henry is a good back. I mean, it's something there.
Yep. Those two were 1-2 in yards after contact this season. And Chubb actually was number one with Henry right below him. So
he's incredible.
right.
He's really good.
We're going to make it easy on you, Richard. Would you take the Browns or the Chiefs straight up?
I mean, if you're taking it straight up, you got to go with the favorites. You got to go with the Chiefs.
Don't blame you. All right, Georgie, I'm making you go first, and whatever you say, you got to stick with, man.
Don't yeah, I'll stick. I'll stick with you here. I am so. I thought Richard's points were really compelling, and here's what I'm going to come back to: the Chiefs. Chiefs are going to win this game. They might have to come from behind to win it, and we haven't seen the Chiefs blow teams out recently. They have played close games. Now, I'm not saying I'm ever going to feel like Mahomes is going to lose, because that's how good he is, right? It's like they'd be down 24 and like, yeah, he'll come back. But I do think that the Browns have the ability, and Stefanski has the mentality, to keep it close. So the Browns keep it close, but we get a little Mahomes magic at the end. That's what I'm kind of hoping for. No one wants blowouts.
You know, the interesting part for me is the Browns haven't even practiced in 2 weeks. They haven't even practiced. I don't know what that says about practice, but I remember a certain basketball player who said,
you can ask
practice.
Alan Iverson.
You know, and so you just, I think the Browns can keep it within 10 too. I just haven't seen enough out of the Chiefs lately to make me believe that they're just going to dominate. But you know what that week off does for you too. You know, it's a hard thing to overcome, but I'm going to do the Browns too.
We're riding with Joe Woods.
Joe Woods. I like Joe Woods. He's a really good guy. All right, let's go over to the Buccaneers and Saints game now. Saints, a 3-point favorite. We had the misfortune of calling the big blowout on Sunday Night Football. What was that, George? 38-3 or something? Man. I've never seen a game over more quickly and stay over with no fight back whatsoever. Right now, I think that the Saints have beaten Tampa five straight. But it's there's something about Tampa right now. They didn't put on a great show, but Washington has a great defense. And Antonio Brown is becoming a factor, a bit of an X factor in this offense now at the end of the season. And Brady's been red hot.
I think it's familiarity. You know, I think, as they always say, it's hard to beat the team twice. It's hard to beat the team three times in a row. And I know you said they beat them five, but they haven't beat them five with Tom Brady at the helm. And nope. Beating Tom Brady in the playoffs is, as this league has found out, not easy to do. He does not go quietly into the night. And I don't know a time where he's gone quietly into the night with much worse receivers than he has now. Right now, I mean, he has receivers that have either been top five or are currently top five, top 10 in this football league. And he trusts them. He has two good backs, a good run game. I mean, you can go back to the same thing. The defense, they haven't played the best as of late, but early in the season, they were one of the top defenses in football. Levante David is incredible at the middle linebacker spot. I think it's going to be, you know, if they can contain Mike Thomas and obviously Kamara, you know, you have to, they know him now. They know how they're going to get attacked. They know what they're going to have to deal with. It's just about executing.
Yeah, now they've got to deal with Deontay Harris, who went off in that game. You know, he'd been out for about a month and a half, something like that. Mike Evans put on a show. Everybody thought that he wasn't even going to play in the game. And you mentioned Levante. They get Devin White back for this game as well. So, and he's a bit of the X factor, blitzing and coverage and the whole thing too. So, but for whatever reason, Georgie, it seems like that the Saints have kind of had their number here this year.
Yeah, I'm going to make the claim that – so they played week one. That was like a year and a half ago, right? So many things have happened since week one in the world and in the NFL. So that game, like, different team. Then when they played, I think it was week 10, that game that you had, Chris, they had no Ali Marpet, who has been the best guard aside from Wyatt Teller, basically all season in PFF grade. He's been amazing. And as you pointed out, was really key to all the things that they really like to do. And then that game was kind of a wake-up call. And I think since the bye, the Bucs have really changed their identity, which is realizing, yeah, we have Tom Brady and he's still really freaking good. Like, let's do some of the things that help him out. And so they've run more play action on early downs. They're letting Brady attack through the passing game on early downs. And it's changed the way they've played. Tom Brady is the highest graded player since the bye. And I think with Antonio Brown really starting to feel himself, I would almost make the claim that the Bucks have the best weapons of any team left in the playoffs. I don't know, Rich, if you would say maybe the Chiefs have better weapons, but if you look at it, Antonio Brown playing the way that he can play, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, Gronk, who we know playoff time, like all you need him for is 10 plays. He can make some serious plays. I just feel like this is a different Bucks team.
I agree. I don't know if I agree with the great weapons, the best weapons in the playoffs. You know, you can't say that with how the Chiefs have played. And
what about compared to the Saints' weapons?
Oh, they have more weapons than Saints for sure. Yeah. You know, but I think you can't underestimate Emmanuel Sanders and what he brings. Mm-hmm. There's a reason he came in and had the impact he did in San Francisco last year. He's a great player. He's underrated. He's never going to get the credit he's due. He's never going to get, you know, the accolades that he's due. But I think he will be a huge factor in this game, even more so than Mike Thomas. And I think that he will factor in. But I agree with Antonio playing like he is and Bruce Arians using him like they are. Like it's going to be difficult, and they're going to put him in situations. He's just getting into football rhythm. Like last game was the first time he looked like, hey, like he's in football shape. He's in rhythm. He's not second guessing. He's not still figuring things out. Like he's turning into himself. And I think Tom trusts that. And Gronk, like you said, it's only a couple plays a game. He'll throw up a fade ball. They'll get him one-on-one with a linebacker or a safety. He'll, you know, box him out, catch the ball, you know, rumble down the field, and they'll get in rhythm. You know, Tom trusts him more than anything. I mean, a couple of years ago, they completed 3 third-and-10s.
Yeah.
Was that last year or the year before?
That was 2 years ago, yeah.
2 years ago. But that's what they can do in those situations. It's the playoffs. Like, he doesn't need to go for 200 yards or anything like that. He will catch clutch football plays from Tom Brady, and Tom will trust him.
Well, here's the question. Have the Saints now become a defensive-oriented football team? Have they now sort of been taken over on that side of the ball? And, you know, Malcolm Jenkins certainly has been a factor coming over there. You know, he's the great quarterback, and I think you could see it when he left Philadelphia that it hurt there. And you've got this guy in C.J. Gardner-Johnson who's getting somebody on the other team thrown out every week now. So there's a lot of disturbances going on, but this defense now has been rock solid. But back to your point about Brady, I don't know if this is since our game, but it's somewhere close to it. In the last 5 games, Brady is 116 for 176, 1,700 yards, 14 touchdowns, 1 interception. And that's about the time that Antonio started working into this mix as well. So as good as the Saints defense has been, you know, are they going to have enough answers for all of that, you know? And can the Saints put up enough points if Brady does go put up 28?
Well, that's the question. That's a big question. I mean, Drew has come back and he's played well, but I don't think the Saints D-line get enough credit, you know, with Cam Jordan and the fellas. They really make an impact. They make the job easier for the back end. They make sure that, you know, they don't have to do as much. I think DeMario Davis, he's a huge factor in it. You know, I mean, he doesn't get enough credit. I think, you know, obviously they have Lattimore, they have Jackrabbit in the back end. You know, you say everything. They have a really, really good and sound team, and they can play a variety of schemes. They can play quarters. They can play three. They can go two man. They can go straight up man. They can go zero, and they can get the job done at a high level. And you can't say that about a ton of defenses that, hey, we can be this variable but still compete at a high level, the same level. And that's what makes them really sound. But it's been some limitations to Drew, you know, and that's just, you know, being straight up, you know. Alvin Kamara has been able to make a lot out of a little. And if he can continue to do that, then they'll be fine. But, you know, it's the Bucks defense versus the Saints offense will be kind of the wild card in this one.
All right, what do you think there, Georgie? Who are you picking in this one?
I'm going with the Bucs. They have the better quarterback, and they have the better receivers. And I just think, man, Antonio Brown, I had to go back and watch. I was actually trying to find some Jalen Ramsey versus who I thought was yeah, I was trying to find players kind of like in that Davante Adams. This guy's just such a technician. And I actually stumbled across Jalen Ramsey versus Antonio Brown from a few years ago. And Antonio Brown is so good. I would actually be curious, Richard, what you think like about that kind of a comparison. Like, is there anyone now today, is Davante Adams maybe that guy that is that much of a just absolute machine in the way that he attacks the route running side of the game? So I'm going to go with the Bucs. I think they atone for their sins from the first two matchups.
I've seen enough. I've seen this series enough. And I know the first game, I don't even count that one because that was a fluke of a game. Neither one of them played well. But that second game when Saints rolled in there and just blew them away, I don't know if I can discount it. I kind of like the idea that Deontay Harris now gives them an alternative for Alvin Kamara. You know, and just the fact that they've got Michael Thomas back. It's like the band's back together. Maybe they needed one rehearsal last week against a good Bears defense. I mean, let's say you can't discount what they are. I'm going to take the Saints. Richard, you want a shot at it or you don't care?
Nah.
Yeah. Oh, come on. Who's winning this game, Brady or Breeze?
I got to go with Saints defense. Or they're going to make enough plays to get the job done. You know, I don't know if it's Brady against Breeze or a defensive guy. I think the Saints defense will play well enough to win. I think they'll make enough plays. I think it'll come down to the secondary, and their secondary is good enough to get the job done.
All right, let's move on to our final game of the weekend here. And this is going to be – I'm hoping it's the best one. It's the one we're doing. So you're going to get the defense of the Baltimore Ravens going up against Josh Allen and this high-flying offense over here. And, you know, Josh Allen made some mistakes in that game the other day. But you take Josh Allen off the field for the Buffalo Bills, and there wasn't much. They're not running the ball at all right now. Josh Allen's their running game. He made, you know, when he held onto the ball, the sack fumble that almost cost him the game at the end of it, he still got some of that in him. But you can't say that was horrible without looking at the touchdown, scramble, toss, whatever the hell that was in the first quarter. So you're going to get both, right? So there's a big swing factor here with Josh Allen. But I know one thing, aren't many people lining up to tackle him when he's rambling down the field. That's a big man.
I know Leonard is, and he lined him up really nice the other day. I don't think anybody's lined him up like that since he's been playing. But I think that was the best kind of case scenario for him to get really hard, bad lessons and still win the game in the playoffs, because it gives you – now he has a understanding of the sense of urgency, the suddenness of the playoffs. Like, people are like, man, the playoffs are so much faster. They're not faster. It's actually really slow because everybody's beat to hell. Everybody's really moving super, like, as slow as they probably have the whole season. I don't know what the GPS says, but I know on the field that's how it feels. It's like everybody's, like, kind of limping through. Like, it's like, you know, everybody's moving in slow motion, so everybody's moving the same speed. Nobody's moving fast, and you know every play. Like, it's not like you're like, hey, what are they running? I know your scheme. I know how you're attacking us. Can you be better than me on this play? Can I be better than you on this play? And Josh Allen, going into that, he didn't understand the finality of the playoffs, I don't think. Like, you lose, you go home, your season's over. All your happiness, oh, after the game, we're going to get him next week. No, it's done. And I think that play, going back and understanding that could have been the end of your season and you could have lost the dream, but being able to rebound and say, hey, we're getting a second chance, it'll give him a better sense of urgency going into this game. I think he will play more sound. I think he will play more efficient. But he also did some things in the playoffs that showed that he's playing fearless. Like that shot put pass, to be patient enough to run the play and take your shot and say, hey, I'm going to try to run it first. And then, hey, I'm pulling it back. Now I need to see my receiver and put it on him. Like, that play took forever. And not many players are going to wait for it to develop in that way. It takes too much time. It takes too much poise. It's like, get it to him. Hurry up. Get the ball out of my hands or run it. But I think that he will be the factor in this game. And I do not, with the way they've been playing, I don't see him losing.
I was going to say, like, we talked about Ramsey and Adams. And Diggs versus Marlon Humphrey is one hell of a matchup as well. I mean, Marlon Humphrey is maybe one of the least or most underappreciated corners in the league, I think. He's just like, the guy never gives up on a play, which I think is really cool. Like, even if he gives up, you know, even if he gives up a reception, there's like a really good chance he punches it out of there. It's incredible how well he does with that. And then Stephon Diggs has been, I think, the key to unlocking this offense for Josh Allen. The way that he's able to get open with such regularity, he has the most yards against single coverage of any receiver in the entire league. And so to me, that's the key matchup there, because if Diggs can consistently get open, Josh Allen will be able to continue to throw the ball down the field. And that has been where he's excelled this year. So I think that's one hell of a matchup. I'm going to go with the offensive guy at home again. I'm trying to learn from someone that knows a lot more than me, and Richard Sherman. And I just think Diggs, you know, he's probably a top five receiver in this league right now. Like, that's how good he's playing. So I'll take the Bills and Josh Allen.
You know, AJ Brown made some plays in that thing. I mean, they really just stayed man coverage to try and take away Derrick Henry this past week. And Humphrey had the tough assignment. You know, he was given Brown, and Brown made plenty of catches, but they didn't win the game. You know, and so now that it's going to come right back to this. But Lamar Jackson, I don't know if there's a bigger X factor. He had, what, five rushes in that game of over 10 yards, plus the huge touchdown, and really kind of got that off his back as well, right? That he couldn't win a playoff game. He threw a duck. I mean, this was a dying quail of an interception in the first quarter. They're down 10-0, and you're going, oh my God, here we go again. He's gonna lose another one. And then he just kind of put the game on his back. And I've just been studying their offense. They have more players going in more different directions than any team I think I've ever seen. Kansas City does a pretty good job of it too. But they are going to make you eventually tackle Lamar in space, and it is not easy to do.
But I'd say this. I'd say Buffalo has just similar to New Orleans, they have some of the best DBs and most complete DBs in the game. You know, they have one of the best corners in football. They have two of the best safeties and most sound. You know, they're sound in the scheme. They're sound tacklers, sound in coverage. You know, they can get the job done. I think Tremaine Edmonds is a bit underrated in what he's able to do and what he's used in that scheme. He's incredibly versatile. And once again, I'll go back to what you were saying about the Ravens playing man coverage. I think it's going to be more difficult with Josh Allen's mobility. You know, Lamar is going to be mobile. Lamar is going to be very tough to deal with, but they only scored 20 points last game. You know, so he factored in, and one of them was on an unbelievable run by Lamar Jackson. And so, but in the same breath, I think Buffalo scores it a lot easier. You know, they move the ball easier. He has weapons. He doesn't mind throwing it to whoever. You know, I mean, I don't even think – I know Diggs had a great game, but I think their whole receiving core had a great game last week. And it wasn't Josh Allen's best work. And I think if you're going to man them up the whole game, it's not going to be the initial play that kills you. It's going to be the secondary scramble. It's going to be the, hey, well, I covered the dig, and then he just freaking turned around and went back out to the sideline. It's like, well, I was beating him to the dig, and he turned back out, and now I'm behind the out. Like, and I think that's the factor that you can't account for. And at least when we played them, we had their plays buttoned up a few times, and they ended up being explosive plays because he casually extended the play. He didn't panic. He didn't say, hey, I'm going to scramble, I'm going to run. He said, hey, this is my outlet. I'm going to move and create three more seconds for this guy. Hey, you get here, ball. And these receivers were making unbelievable catches. So it's going to be hard. It's going to be tough game.
Richard, who does that remind you of? Because there's a guy that comes to mind. The way you describe that, extends the play casually and then beats us for a big play.
It's Aaron. And the fact that when he extends it, I have to be super cognizant. They ran 7-7 on me one time, and I'm the third defender. So I'm obviously responsible for the deeper seven, but teams run 7-7. The first seven's usually at like 15 yards or so. Mm-hmm. And the second seven's at like 30. Their first seven was at 40 yards. Their second seven was heading to 70. And so it stretched me so far down the field, but I still had to go to the high seven because if I would have took the 40 yard, he would have hit the 70.
Yeah.
You know? And so that has to be in your mind, because not only can he throw it anywhere he wants, he can get it anywhere on the field. And that's similar to Aaron. Aaron can throw it 80 yards backside of the field outside the numbers.
Yeah, but I'll say this about Wink Martindale and this defense is that they're built on the back end. I mean, they really are. Marcus Peters and Jimmy Smith's a good player who has some size to him. You know, he's probably 6'2 and 210. Humphrey comes down into the slot to be able to cover. They're both their safeties are hitters. But there's not really a guy on this team that you go, oh, wow, he's a great pass rusher, right? I mean, Judon, a lot of times it's scheme that gives him a free run. Ngakoue's a little bit of the same thing. Calais inside can push it a little bit. But A, you're not running it inside on Big Baby and Brandon Williams and Calais Campbell. You're just not running Derek Wolf, all those guys in there. But it really does come down to how this secondary can make plays. And then the scheme of Wink Martindale is they're going to have seven guys up there. And I dare anybody to try and figure out which one of those four or five are going to come on a given play. Because, and then they also are really good, Richard, you'll understand this, at whichever one of those two or three defensive linemen or linebackers drop out of there, they're dropping right underneath play design. I mean, it is right. You can almost bet on it that they know on third down they're coming with this pick play or this slant or this hook or whatever it is, because their guys are dropping right underneath play design.
But that's the thing that's really cool about their scheme, but that's what makes it so difficult. Now, Marcus Peters is going to be also an X factor because he can just take the ball. You know, Marcus has a knack for it, you know, and as somebody who has a knack for it, you either have it or you don't. And he can do it. He can take it when it's not his man. Oh, I drifted off this receiver. I thought this guy was running this play, so I went over here and took the ball.
Do you and Marcus, because I honestly just made my tape for my production crew for the NBC game. I said, and I go, this is Richard. This is what Richard does. Richard isn't looking at that receiver. Marcus Peters isn't looking at the receiver. He's looking at the quarterback. I mean, so he lets people on the backside of plays run wide. If the quarterback's looking away, he's not even paying attention. And then the minute he snaps back, he can come back. The game-altering interception when the kid fell down, the only reason that Marcus Peters even made the interception, he wasn't looking at the receiver that fell down. He was just looking at the quarterback, and the quarterback threw it right to him.
Right. I mean, we don't talk super in-depth about what he does. He's such an instinctual guy. You know, I'm sure if we sat there and asked him to explain it, he could explain it, but he couldn't teach it to somebody else to do. He couldn't say, hey, this is how I tell you to figure this out, because he's such an instinct, and he has some of the best feet and instincts as a corner in the game today. But I still think that in those pressure plays that you're talking about, that, hey, they bring in pressure and the DN's going to drop right under it. Those plays work, the DN's under it for that split second. It's like, hey, when a quarterback's supposed to get the ball out, the DN's right under it in that window. But if the play extends, it's a huge hole.
And yeah, so that happened to him last week too. They had the linebacker sitting on the inside of it, but the tight end crossed his face and then there was nobody there.
And if Josh, this is back to the casually creating more time in those plays. If he can casually create more time in those plays, he can deftly punish those rushers. So I think he'll be careful about the type of looks and the type of pressure he brings, and to make sure he contains Josh Allen, because if he doesn't, those pressures and those, you know, hold up looks will be exposed.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game. It's just a great game. Georgie, who are you taking in this one?
I am going with the Bills. I was just going to say, I think it's fascinating. We have Lamar Jackson, who was the MVP last year. Last year at this time, you would have said Lamar Jackson out of this class, undoubtedly the top pick, right? Now Josh Allen had an elite season, and you go, man, I think if I'm redrafting this class, I'm taking Josh Allen without a question now.
What about Baker Mayfield?
And then you got Baker Mayfield, who in his rookie year was the most impressive, has petered out, but now is having a resurgence. This weekend is going to probably determine how we talk about this class for like the whole next 4 or 5 months, which I think is absolutely crazy. That's the way that the NFL news cycle works. But right now I'm going to take Josh Allen, and the Buffalo Bills.
Anyway, you guys are awesome, man. Thank you very much. I feel like I gotta hear
Richard's. This game is such a close game. Richard knows more about football than both of us. Who comes out ahead here?
I think I go with Buffalo. You know, I think he's too much of an X factor. I know that Lamar is gonna make his plays. He's gonna get his yards. I know that Marcus Peters and that defense are gonna make their plays, and they're gonna make things happen. But I think he's just been having to, unless he just, you know, relapses somewhere in the middle of this game and it you know, goes back to how he was a couple years ago. If he plays like he has this season, I mean, I'd be hard pressed to see them losing this game.
Awesome. Can't wait. Well, thank you, sir, Richard. That was it was great fun. And Georgie, as always, I'm sure we have other things to discuss, but we'll let Richard go on that note. Thanks for getting up at the crack of dawn here on Tuesday so I can go back to work on my Saturday game.
No problem. I'm happy to do it. I'm glad we got it done.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.